And greetings, happy Friday. Welcome to the Steve Dace Show here live and on demand on Blaze TV, radio, and podcast alongside Todd Erzin without Aaron McIntyre, but he is being capably filled in for, maybe too capably, Aaron, if you are tuned in right now, by our intern Victoria, who is doing a fantastic job. We are the Steve Dace Show. We are here on Blaze TV. We are brought to you by our friends over at First Cup Coffee Company, the Christian-owned Patriot Coffee Company that makes first and foremost great coffee. We wouldn't put them on the show just because they have a similar value system. First of all, the product's got to be good. Then it's a bonus that the value system lines up as well. And that is the case here. The roast date is on every bag. You'll see it is shipped within days of roasting. There's a flavor for every freedom-loving American. You can try it right now and get 10% off with my last name, Dace, as your promo code at firstcup.com. Use the promo code Dace at firstcup.com. And if you subscribe, you'll get an additional 10% off for the life of the subscription as well at firstcup.com. And then I want to also remind you the special, but just seems to become more and more pertinent every single day. I mean, with what's going on in Congress, just as we speak right now, just the complete selling out of the country. I don't know. Did you see, Todd, what our editor here at The Blaze, Matthew Peterson, tweeted? I think it was early this morning or late last night, that what's happening now is the stuff that used to go on behind the scenes in order to get the agenda that the Uniparty wants, they've just got to nakedly do it out in the public. And you're watching Mike Johnson do that right now. Okay. And I thought that was very descriptive of what is happening at the moment. We've gone from the transition is complete from there is no Uniparty, there is no Unibrow, to what would we do without it? The Unibrow and the Uniparty is fantastic, right? We're in the midst of that transition right now is where we are. And if you want to know one of the reasons why, you need to watch, bought and paid for, our Blaze TV special. It is absolutely fantastic. I mean, that's pretty fantastic, too, if you want to go see Jason Whitlock's Fearless Roll Call at fearlessrollcall.com. But bought and paid for the Blaze TV original on, dollar amounts are named. The names of politicians are called out on both sides, by the way. Don't miss this. DaceOriginals.com is where you can see it. And get $30 off with the code DaceOriginals at DaceOriginals.com. We will get to Feedback Friday coming up in the next segment of the program. But let us begin, as we always do on a Friday, with the Dace Group. Your weekly look at the week that was, and there are our panelists. Blaze media colleague Jill Savage is down there live in Dallas. Good to see you, Jill. And because without Aaron here, there needed to be at least one smart man. I'm not a smart man, but I know what love is. We needed at least one smart man on the panel. It's our good friend Josh Hammer. Good to see both of you. How are you? Jill, starting with you. How you doing?
I am doing very well and excited to be on with Josh as well. Big fan of his and listen to his podcast that he puts out pretty much all the time. So excited to be here.
Josh, how's it feel right now to be living through the live and real time selling out of America? How you doing today, bro?
Steve, you know, I'm a little under the weather today as I texted you, but it's always a pleasure to join you here on the Dace Group. And Jill, the respect, my friend, is very much mutual. So it's great to be with you and looking forward to a fun show.
Let's get to it. Without Aaron, we won't have the typical intros. We'll do this a little bit more roundtable style, a little bit more Dace Group unplugged, if you will. So let's start with issue one. This week's sign, the apocalypse is upon us. Each of you were to bring an offering to the table. It shouldn't be very difficult in the times in which we live. Jill, ladies first, we'll begin with you.
Well, Josh says this is going to be a fun show. Let's just dispel that rumor right now, because as we get into issue one, things will start getting a little more dreary. My story that I came with today is one that shows how much we just don't value life. But the sad part is that if you look at this story through the lens of Democrats, I'm almost shocked that they find this repulsive, that they actually prosecuted this guy. There was a Georgia father that was sentenced to 50 years in prison for poisoning his newborn's breast milk with antifreeze, right? This father had an 18-day-old baby, and he decided that, you know what, I don't want to pay child support for this child. So instead, I'm just going to go ahead and poison the breast milk with antifreeze and hope that nobody will figure it out. We can just kill the 18-day-old baby. And again, when you look at it with the Democrats, the kid's only 18 days old, right? You could have killed it 18 days ago, and they would have been totally
right.
fine with it.
19 days prior, if the mother had drank antifreeze, they would have been okay, right? Yeah.
Exactly. So when I look at this, not only from this story itself, but just the overall implications of we just don't value life. And until we do that, we have some very hard truths to face.
Indeed. That is a sign of the apocalypse for sure. Todd, what about you?
I'm wearing it. Respect to your sports. President Biden released it just this morning, a total rewriting of Title IX to say that basically a woman isn't what you think it is anymore, and all the trannies get whatever they want. Folks, and this is happening at a time. Just yesterday, somebody was arrested, a transgendered individual writing a 129-page manifesto about who they were going to shoot up, and it was going to involve a lot of children because they're easier to target. There's that. And then on the other side, this is happening at the same time that something that many people thought was impossible has happened. The whole Caitlin Clark phenomenon, that women's sport that isn't an Olympic sport and doesn't have a male brand that is just so already dominant that will never allow a woman simply to rise up to their level and take media, money, things like that. It all happened. This just happened. And in the face of that, with those two bookends, the 129-page transgender manifesto to kill people and the Caitlin Clark Hear Women Roar story, Joe Biden, our devout Catholic president, is choosing the 129-page murder manifesto. That's what gutting Title IX is. This isn't just about sports. I happen to have four daughters who be pretty good at sports, but this is fundamentally Matt Walsh stuff. What is a woman? And if we can't get that right, folks, it is simply impossible for us as a culture to get anything that matters at all right.
Hmm. Josh, what's yours?
You know, first of all, let me just echo what Todd said there. So, you know, my buddy Ryan Williams, who's the president of the Claremont Institute, he gave a very interesting interview. This is way back, gosh, I guess 2.5 years ago now. It was literally like October 2021. It was just after I moved to Florida. I remember reading it. He gave an interview with Emma Green of The Atlantic. And the somewhat provocative but nonetheless true statement that Ryan said to the interviewer, Emma Green, was that America right now in the 2020s is actually more divided than it was in the 1850s because back then we actually all worship the same creator. We just happened to disagree over the so-called peculiar institution and how much it had spread into the Western territories. Mm-hmm. But to Aaron's point, when you were disagreeing over chromosomal structure and the so-called transgender issue, then you have by definition lost common faith in a deity, in a creator. And, you know, history teaches that very bad things can start to happen from there. But, you know, in my answer, I'll take it in a slightly different direction, Steve. You know, as you know, I follow the anarchy, the pro-Hamas anarchy that is ripping and tearing across this country quite closely. And this week has been shockingly eye-opening when it comes to that. So on Monday, on tax day, April 15th, you saw the Golden Gate Bridge in San Francisco shut down. You saw protesters who were closing down businesses out on the streets down in downtown Manhattan. Right here in Florida, we had some of our own shenanigans, although thank goodness the law enforcement here actually made some arrests. And then in Columbia University this week, you had people burning stuff down, the encampments. You know, I just want to pause here and make a very basic point here. Look, I think it is totally fine for an American to look at a foreign conflict, even a foreign conflict involving a close ally, and concluding, you know what? I just don't particularly care. We have enough of our problems. I think that sometimes is smart, sometimes it's not smart, but that's basically always going to be defensible. What is indefensible is getting out there and openly supporting the freaking enemy, mm-hmm. whether it is Hamas, people on Monday with a green Hamas headband, people who are out there with waving the yellow flag of Hezbollah. these U.S. recognized foreign terrorist organizations, the same Hezbollah that killed hundreds at the Marine barracks in Beirut, Lebanon in the 1980s. You have people at Columbia University and Ivy League school saying we support Iran. Are you people kidding me? The Islamic Republic of Iran, which has the blood of hundreds and hundreds, almost 1,000 dead Americans on their hands just from the roadside IEDs during the Iraq war, a country that literally chants death to America and its legislature. Look, again, I'm not going John Bolton here. I'm not saying bomb Iran. That's not my stance. But you can't be rooting for the enemy, for God's sake. But at this point, Steve, neoliberal open borders immigration policy, this idea that human beings are widgets, that the free flow of people is the same thing as the free flow of capital and labor, it has caused a complete and utter catastrophe in this country and Western civilization. I do not think that America has any game plan whatsoever to deal with the fifth column, these subversive actors that we have willfully brought into our own country.
That's a sick game, folks. Okay? Because, I mean, that was a tour de force right there. And, I mean, you said a couple things I just feel like I've got to respond to, Josh, because they were very compelling. Number one, the broader historical analysis that, is it Ryan Williams you quoted there?
Yes.
Was offering? You know, we have pointed out on our show in the past, and he said it better than we had, but if you look at what life was like in the 1850s in America, you know, let's take issues of homosexuality and transgenderism, which would not have even been, you know, speakable in their time or understandable in that time. Let's take issues of sexual identity that would have been tempting or temptable for their era and apply it the same metric to them. Okay. The idea that you would move to the blue north states, which were more urban, so divorce was more rampant, premarital sex was more rampant, shacking up was more rampant. I mean, the value system that existed in Pennsylvania and Maryland was really no different than the value system that existed in Georgia and in North Carolina, with one exception, really. That, and now it's a pretty big exception, but that one moral incontrovertible issue split an entire union. Other than the South was more agrarian, the North was more urban and industrial, other than day-to-day vocational, you know, things that go along with way of life on a secondary level, fundamentally, the idea that there was that if you just go to these other states and aside from slavery, holistically different moral codes. Like, I've got to get away from New York and move to Virginia, where they still have traditional values. No one would have said that in 1858. No one. Wasn't true. This has not been true until now in this country. That's what that's what Ryan is alluding to. And I think people don't understand really what that means for the long-term future of the country. And you are again articulating a point that is frustrating me. I don't know how much you know about traditional Nicene Christian theological disputes about the nation of Israel, and has it finished its mission, and is this iteration of Israel since 1948, is it prophetically worthy or noteworthy or not? I mean, these are debates that have raged within Christendom for 2,000 years and still are, but you don't even have to enter into those debates to understand the history that is recent that we've all lived through. We are equally people of the book. Islam would gut us both if they could, and they have. I don't have to have a position on whether the prophetic countdown of the second coming began on May 15th, 1948. I don't have to have the dispensational view of dual tracked paths to salvation between Jews and Jews. I don't have to have any of those positions or even know that they exist to just look at what we've lived through in the last generation. There's one worldview out there trying to behead people. There's one worldview out there trying to blow people up, okay? And it's this one. Period. End of sentence. Doesn't take any more of a nuanced view of this entire situation than that. Now, can there be nuanced views, as you pointed out, Josh, on then how far to go and what to do about it? All right. There's the pin and the pole, the yin and the yang. I do think in a strange way, and we'll probably get into this more in the next segment. In fact, we will. But the fact that there are Arab neighbors now actively assisting Israel, not just putting out press releases, but actively committing action in assistance of Israel, does complicate hate the math and just unilaterally going out and responding to Iran, because if you've got real allies now, you've got to consider their blowback and their political collateral, that they've got skin in the game now too. You don't, you know, it's the dude code. You don't leave a boy, you don't leave your buddies hanging. Okay, so we'll get into that more in the next hour or in the next segment, because you can have a nuanced view of what the solution to the reality is, but you cannot nuance the reality. And this is what you were talking about. And that's what Jill was talking about. Everywhere we go, we want to nuance reality. If that baby was 19 days ago and the mom drank antifreeze, not a single Democrat elected official would say a word about it. Instead, they'd be doing what Todd talked about to Title IX and the definition of women. I thought about coming through for you, Josh, because I know you're sick, but I just can't bring myself, with a young lady here about not much, I've got daughters her age, I just can't come through for you, brother, with a Lindsey Graham joke. I'm sorry. I apologize.
I thought you retired them.
Well, I thought about bringing it back for you just because you were sick. It was going to be my gift to you. You know, I mean, I was going to come up with something like on a scale of 1 to 10, you know, like just hypothetically, on a scale of 1 to 10, one that Lindsey Graham will pound the table to make sure we get border funding in exchange for funding Ukraine. 10 being that Lindsey Graham will probably just get pounded. I was going to do that. I don't want to do that, though. That would be just really unseemly with a young intern here. And so I won't do that.
10.
Full 10.
And there it is. All right, let's get to our, before we get to issue two, let's talk about our friends over at Jace Medical. They just came through for me this week in a practical way. I mentioned the other day, now that most of COVID is gone, and isn't it amazing? Have you guys noticed since they stopped doing massive experimentation with boosters and genetic therapies, have you guys noticed the variants just kind of went away? Have you noticed the timing of that? Where did all the variants go? Do you know where the variants went?
I've noticed the timing of a lot of things.
Yes, that might be a topic we might want to explore in the future, Mr. Erzin. All right, but with COVID mostly gone now, no longer virally interfering with things like my sinus infections, it came back, my perennial sinus infection this week. I was going to do the normal rigmarole I always do, which is deny it, try a bunch of over-counter stuff that doesn't won't work, but I don't have time to go to the doctor and waste 2 hours with that process. And then we do 2 or 3 days where I am inhaling Halls and Cepacol lozenges, and you guys are all annoyed because you can hear it in the microphone. We've done that before, Todd. People are familiar with this.
A couple of times.
Yeah, we've done this about 15 times. And this time, though, I remembered, hey, here come the symptoms. I've got the doxycycline, man. That is my go-to for the sinus infections. I've got that in the Jace case. Just popped that baby open and finished it off today, and I'm feeling good as new now. So just one practical way you want to get a backup of these venerable medications from our friends at Jace Medical, so that you are in control more so of your healthcare, whether it's a small practical way like my experience here in the last week, or something dramatically more serious, like maybe you need great medications at a time of a pandemic and they tell you that suddenly they're dangerous. By the way, just completely coincidentally, you should know, you can get ivermectin in the Jace case if you want. So you can get their venerable medications. You can add to it, customize it, especially for a loved one that you want to make sure they have the meds they need. Go to jacemedical.com, J-A-S-E for jacemedical.com. Use the code DACE at the checkout for a discount at jacemedical.com. Discount code DACE. All right, let's get to issue two. Iran attacks, so how should Israel respond? We have reports here in the overnight that Israel has responded, the details are still coming in as of now, but they may have responded in a way that maybe many people did not anticipate, by utilizing anti-Ayatollah Kurds within Iran as the means by which to target some of their sites. We don't really know all the details of all of this yet at the time that we are talking about it, but some form of response has occurred in the last few hours. Josh, let's start with you on this. How do you think Israel should respond, and then how would you like them to?
Yeah, so Steve, this all kind of came as a surprise to me when I woke up this morning. You know, I went to sleep early last night to try and sleep off this illness, and I woke up to like a million notifications. Some of them were about the fact that Israel had struck inside Iran last night in a city called Isfahan, which for those of us who track these things closely, we know that there has been a long-time Iranian nuclear facility there. There was an Iranian military base there. There were reports I saw online of also a strike on a building in downtown Baghdad. I'm not sure if there's such thing as downtown Baghdad, but in Baghdad, Iraq these days, where apparently you had some IRGC, Iranian commanders and generals who were there as well. There was some reports out of Syria and Lebanon. So a lot of them is the fog of war. It's very difficult to make out exactly what happened, but it does look like that some sort of retaliation has happened a lot sooner than many of us anticipated. And the real question is this going to be it? Is this going to be it for now? And I think that actually quite possibly might be it, for the very simple reason that, you know, one, I don't think Prime Minister Netanyahu wants to do any more to distance himself from Joe Biden. I mean, unfortunately, Israel finds itself in this situation where it's had its military day-to-day tactics and strategies essentially subject to a Washington, D.C. veto power, which is utterly absurd, Steve. I mean,
explain why that is, Josh. Explain why that is.
Part of it, unfortunately, I think, is the mentality of the Israeli military and their generals in general, which, you know, a lot of Americans probably don't understand this, but the Israeli military and the generals are just as woke and left-wing as the American generals are. So, like, Mark Milley, there are many equivalents of Mark Milley over in Israel. And what that cashes out to in practice is that they want to kowtow and bend the knee to Joe Biden and his very anti-Israel, anti-Semitic Democratic Party. That's what it means in practice. But, you know, if I'm speculating here, Steve, and again, this is pure conjecture. My guess right now is that this limited strike or series of strikes is probably part of an explicit or implicit quid pro quo with the Biden administration, whereby Israel responds in so-called limited fashion in exchange for getting the green light, because, again, the U.S. is calling the veto shots here. Israel gets the green light to then go into Rafah, the southernmost stronghold for Hamas in Gaza. I think that's probably what's going on here. I would expect that operation to commence probably after the Passover holiday that starts next week. But obviously, it's pure conjecture on my part.
Josh, we were trying to look at this from multiple angles earlier this week, and we contemplated the possibility. You look at Iran's response. The number of 300 plus missiles sounds voluminous, and it is. A lot of them failed in the atmosphere before they even reached strategic air defense. Most of them were annihilated once they did. It really demonstrated how weak they are in terms of manifesting their own ideology here. How much of this do you think was, hey man, Israel punked us? We're in an honor Islamic culture here. We've got a base of zealots here at home. We've got domestic policy considerations here. We got to make it look like we're doing something. So they put out this video last Saturday night, makes it look like they're actually outright declaring war. And then they lob these 300 missiles that most of them didn't even actually reach the strategic missile defense as it is. How much of this was just a political contrivance by Iran, in your view, to satisfy its own domestic political calculations? And how much of it do you think they really intended or thought that would wreak havoc, and it just demonstrated they have a papier-mâché army?
So I actually do think it's primarily the latter. So, you know, reliable public polling inside Iran is very difficult to get, as you might think. But, you know, the regime only has a fairly modest percentage of the Iranians who support them. This fanatical Islamist regime is not a good fit for the Iranian people. I mean, the Empire of Persia, going back 3,000 years, you know, has given the world a lot. This is a very rich culture, a rich history with a rich tradition there. And, you know, they've been indoctrinated for 45 years into Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps approved Islamism. But they're largely not necessarily the ones who are out there on the streets kind of cheering on. You know, they have some of that. A lot of it is regime orchestrated. It's AstroTurf. It's stuff like that there. But I think that they actually really probably wanted to inflict a lot of damage. And, you know, some of the actual defenses from both Israel and the U.S. and some of the other allies that took part, some of these defenses were actually previously untested. So Israel used, I think it's an Arrow 2 or Arrow 3, which is basically a space laser. It's basically a Marjorie Taylor Greene Jewish space laser, essentially. And, like, it actually worked. I mean, it literally worked for the first time, actually. It's the first time that's ever been used.
So there are Jewish space lasers, and we actually are seeding clouds with chemtrails. Things that were confirmed this week. They haven't been conspiracy theories all along. Anyway, finish, Josh. Go ahead.
Yeah, but like the Arrow 3, and then the U.S. had a similar, it's an SM-3 missile interceptor. I think it was the first time the U.S. has ever used one of those within an actual live combat mission, and both were shockingly successful. So, you know, Iran didn't necessarily think that they were going to cause heavy damage, but they did make both Israel and the U.S. deploy some of the sophisticated weaponry for the first time, and who knows how it might have played out in a different universe.
Okay. Jill, your thoughts?
When I look at this situation, how do we get here, right? Biden has been coddling everybody in the Middle East, saying, you can go ahead and do this. We'll supply you money. You see now, because everything has been weakened within the United States administration, that foreign adversaries feel comfortable going out and making these attacks on Israel. What I look at, what even just the early reports from what Israel did last night, it looks more like precision to me. And, we could do this whenever we want. You won't know when we're going to be doing this, because Netanyahu doesn't feel like he has to ask Joe Biden anymore. Reports earlier this week, you know, Josh, has the limited strikes. There were reports earlier this week that Iran, you know, Biden knew ahead of time before he was out there sitting on the beach. And they said, hey, keep it limited, keep it small, and we'll just kind of look the other way. When you're in a situation like this, and when you bring it back to the United States, and why do we care? Well, we care about the security. We care about the oil fields that are over there. And, you know, I feel like Israel could go through and do, as you know, as many of these limited strikes as necessary to people that are chanting death to Israel, death to America. But when you look at the 17 days, that's what the last we had for our strategic oil reserves. If you just set this up on a macro level, people, you know, there were all these talks about World War III happening over the weekend. If we can bring it down to something that's not going to escalate it to that level, because if that's the situation that we're in with Joe Biden as the president here, without having any oil in our strategic reserve and hitting Iran in huge, massive ways that could cut off that oil supply and send the price of oil spiking, to me, it's almost incomprehensible that the United States, the superpower of the world, would be so weak that we would be in this position right now. But that's where we are. And when I look at, you know, Israel going and defending itself, and the fact that you guys had mentioned earlier, their neighbors, their Muslim neighbors, are coming in and saying, we're going to actually help you and cut off our airspaces and do all that. Like, I'm actually pretty, you know, when I look at Israel, I'm optimistic with what they were able to do over the last week.
Todd, you've got about a minute.
Well, you asked what I would like them to do. This all depends on the appetite for the Israeli, what appetite the Israeli people have for truly getting outside of the box. But that that leadership structure of the last 45 years, I say this with no need for rhetorical flourish. I would like Israel, when they actually have a Grant who's in charge of their country right now, and I'd like them to take them out. All the other games of debate, boxes have been checked, triangulation, getting people on this side and that side. It still led to October 7th. To truly change paradigms, you need to do things like Lincoln and Grant did. They fight. We're going to end this, and it's going to be hard. But civilization is not the avoidance of having to do terrible things. Sometimes you need to. And I really think that needs to happen. You know, ultimately, though, it's up to the Israeli people. It's not up to me. And I don't blame them for not wanting to do that. It's really hard. But the game we've been playing for 45 years is a loser's game, collectively, as the West.
I would normally have your position because of the political calculations of who we have in power right now. I just don't trust the people we have in power right now to defend our own interests, let alone an ally's. I do think, Jill, you make an important point linking where things are at with the energy supply and the broader domestic political calculations here. If you're running for re-election this year as an incumbent, that matters for sure as well. All right, let's get to the exit question. Will there be an all-out war between Israel and Iran this year? Jill.
No. Based on the fact that they tried to give everything they had, I think, with that, and was completely unsuccessful at 99% rate.
Todd, quickly.
No.
Josh, you get the last word. What do you think?
Yeah, also no.
Well, again, given who we have in charge right now, I'm going to take that as good news. All right, when we come back, let's look at some trend lines here at home economically and what they may mean long term. Stay tuned. All right, back here on the Steve Day Show, powered by Blaze TV Radio and Podcast, brought to you by our friends over at Relief Factor. I know a lot of times we just kind of think, well, pain is just unavoidable and I'll just have to endure it. But it might not be, or at least there could be relief right around the corner with our friends at Relief Factor. Not guaranteeing you anything, but we will tell you that over the years, about a million people have taken our advice around here at The Blaze and tried the 3-week quick start, and they've seen such tremendous results in 3 weeks or less, they've stuck around long term 70% of the time. That's pretty good, since we're only asking for $20 here to see if you don't see a difference in your chronic pain in 3 weeks or less with Relief Factor. How does it work? It's a drug-free supplement created by physicians who can prescribe drugs. And they just noticed, though, that over the years, they were prescribing drugs that may work to mask the pain but not deal with it, and then can come with long-term or even short-term side effects at times. So what if there was? There's not always, you know. And so when there's not, you know, for me, I've tried all of you. You guys always email me all your ailments and your homeopathic stuff. I've tried all that. So that's why I just go to the doxycycline when I get the sinus infection. It's the only thing that works. All right. So sometimes that's all that works. But if there is a drug-free way to do something about it, give it a shot. ReliefFactor.com is where you can go. Get the 3-week quick start for just $20. Why don't you see if you don't see a difference in your pain in just 3 weeks or less when you go to ReliefFactor.com. That's ReliefFactor.com. All right, let's welcome back in our Blaze Media colleague here, Jill Savage, our good friend Josh Hammer, editor over at Newsweek. Let's get to issue 3 here on our weekly look at the week that was. Something wicked this way comes. This is just the latest economic indicator that I've seen come out over the last few weeks. We are now looking at, and this hits close to home for me, because one of the things our family did for the last month or so is look at the possibility of, with our lease in this space coming to an end, getting into a home where the studio could be. And so we got a really good look at the housing market in a state that's about as, I would say, protected against what long-term COVID economic policies have done to the country. Iowa would be on a real short list with a Florida, a Georgia. There's only a handful of these states in the country that are somewhat, have some level of immunization or inoculation, somewhat vaccinated against the long-term economic consequences of what we did during COVID. And even here, the housing market was impossible. Well, on a national level, U.S. housing startups absolutely collapsed to start off the spring in the month of March. It's the biggest drop since the COVID lockdowns, which also occurred in the month of March. We had another report on existing home sales. Those declined again as well. And so these are just some of the markers, the long-term markers I think we ought to be concerned about the possibility of a 2008 level economic downturn next year. Jill, I'll start with you. Do you agree or disagree that this is something to be concerned about, regardless of the outcome of this election?
I completely agree. And I think it's very quaint on this Friday that you're only saying a 2008 level financial downturn. When I look at the scenario that we found ourselves in, right, has it gotten better or worse since 2008? Did we solve any of the problems that we had back then? No, they've gotten worse. Everything has gotten bigger. And now the problem actually centers in the dollar itself. It's not housing. It was the dot-com bubble. Then it was the housing market. Now the problem lives in the dollar itself. It's known as the everything bubble. We're on about 100 days printing $1 trillion. I expect that to probably speed up. And with the inflation that has come about, they've stolen everybody's savings. So a third of Americans are having to work a second job just to continue to pay bills. Credit card debt is at the highest level in history that we've known in this country. I don't see any of the economic indicators getting better before they get worse. And they'll do what they can to save the treasuries, which means that if they have to save the treasuries, they'll risk losing the stock market in for a little while at least. But yeah, I think with what we're looking at, 2008 would be kind of delightful at this point in time.
Wow. Todd, your thoughts?
Well, Jill's right to be even more pessimistic, but I'm going to disagree only because I don't think we're dealing with normal ebbs and flows of free market economics, and where there's certainly differences in terms of the amount of thumb on the scale you should do to prime the pump, things like that. I don't think that's what's going on. I think there is a concerted effort to actually destroy the economy, not to try to fix it in a clumsy way.
So managed decline is what you're describing.
No, managed destruction. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So I think we need to. I'm just discounting the notion of a downturn because I think that's actually way too. The thinking along those lines is way too comfortable.
So you view this as a means to an end, meaning that there's already the backup plan that what this is meant to lead to is already in place.
The 15-minute city people are not thinking about economics like the things that made America great. They don't. They want to destroy this thing. There will be, and I think more like Bane and Batman. Mm-hmm. That's what we need to think about. That's what they're trying to do.
Josh, what do you think?
I mean, look, worse than 2008 is a serious statement, and Jill definitely might be right about that. I certainly pray that she is not. You know, what I can tell you is that someone who's 35 years old, I'm right in the heart of the millennial generation, and who, you know, who's very much, you know, on the market looking to eventually get my relatively new wife and I, you know, our first home. The market here, at least in South Florida, where I live, is not even remotely buyer friendly. But, you know, there are some signs, there are some glimmers of hope, at least here in the South Florida area, that the real estate market might be starting to crash after what has clearly been a bubble, a bubble in no small part due to the fact that so many people have been moving here because of the policies and DeSantis and COVID and all that stuff. So I'm seeing some glimmers of hope on the horizon. But, you know, there are some very basic questions in place. You know, one is the fact that inflation obviously reached 9.1% in the summer of 2022. That was a 40-year high. That was the highest it's been since the Jimmy Carter stagflation era. Mm-hmm. And it's gotten down to between 3% and 4%, but that's still quite a bit above, you know, what our overbearers at the Federal Reserve say.
Because it's still on top of the baked in sunk cost inflation we've already suffered. So we're just talking about the rate of increase.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And the other just gargantuan question, which I've never heard anyone answer me with a straight face, is how actually are we going to start not even getting out of the national debt, just start making it so that we're not running multi-trillion dollar deficits every single year? I have never seen an intellectually honest or serious – and look, we're in a situation where it is actually our arch geopolitical foe, China – that has a very, very, very large percentage of that debt. You know, what if they want to just stop buying treasuries one day and they're going to hold that gun over our head when it comes to Taiwan Semiconductor Manufacturing Company? What if Xi Jinping were to say to Joe Biden, or whoever the next president is, we are going to stop buying U.S. treasuries unless you drop your weapons around Taiwan, Japan, and you let us invade and take all the semiconductors, the very semiconductors that we use for our F-35s, for our iPhone, for everything else. That's a real problem. I mean, I don't actually know how anyone addresses that question. So there are some practical questions here that no one's really asking, and let alone getting answers to those questions.
Yeah. I mean, did the 2008 housing, The Big Short, it's a brilliant, brilliant movie. Yep. And you see it from multiple perspectives, and people just like waking up to the fog. This is really happening? They tried to pull this off and they did. And did we learn anything from it? No. We just reset and said, let's run her back. And whenever we come to this again, this is to Josh's point. We have no plans. We have zero plans. Bringing up 2008 by Jill is such an important point. It's not theoretical. It's right there to look at. We didn't care. We just got worse at everything that brought us to that point originally.
To Josh's and Todd's point, China plays the 100-year game, right? They aren't waiting, you know, just for one little thing here and there. They know what they're going to do. We can't even get a budget in Congress passed. We are day-to-day, continuing resolution by continuing resolution, flying by the seat of our pants, going up against a power that doesn't care what its people say. They will centrally program everything until they win.
So I have been, this will bring us to the exit question. I have been a long-term believer that there will never be a cataclysmic level of economic collapse here until someone else believes they are militarily and are confident in that, militarily superior to us. That while we Nixon took us off the gold standard, pretty much what we've been on for the last 40 years, starting with winning the arms race over the Soviets, is we're on the nuclear weapon of mass destruction standard. All right. We can kill you before you can kill us, basically, and many more of you. And so, therefore, that creates an incentive for a moment like what Josh just described. And in previous eras, if you were this much indebted, particularly to a geopolitical rival, they would have been anxious to call in the note. And the note usually is called by their soldiers outside your city gates looking to invade and kept taking your women and children back with them to the homeland and pillaging and plundering what's left of your homeland. That's typically how it worked. OK, but right now, no one has the army that would be capable of doing something like that or stepping to that. And so, therefore, the risk of military engagement on that level would outweigh tolerating more of this economic largesse, particularly because we still have the largest middle class consumer base to buy a lot of those Chinese made goods anywhere you'd find anywhere else in the world. OK, that's why I kind of to me, 2008, I think, is about the lowest I think that we can go. Eugene disagrees with that, but that kind of explains, just gives you some backdrop of why I used 08 as kind of my barometer. That because it is a managed economy, there's a certain roof or ceiling and a floor at the exact same time. All right. But with all that said as a backdrop, see, I think this is being managed as well for an outcome. And I think next year, if Trump wins, that it's more likely we are to see the scenario that Jill described, because they'll try to COVID him again. That they'll be willing to take a bigger hit and allow the floor to drop a little lower to pin the whole thing on him, or basically hope that he puckers again like what happened with COVID and just hands them much of the power that they're after. And then if Biden wins, it'll be a softer fall, and the messaging will be different. It'll be more idealistic and say that's exactly why we need to go to the new plan, the new, you know, world order, the new plan, basically, that this is the Cloward pivoting of America one way or the other. All right. So exit question. Agree or disagree with that? Jill.
I would agree with it to a certain extent, but I would also ask if any of the invasion from the southern border would change your mind in what has been going on.
Meaning, who's come across?
Normally,
yes.
You can't get into the country normally.
Yeah.
But that has changed now.
What did Fox News reported last week? How many single male Chinese nationalists have been occupied
exactly
at the border in the last few months? There was some outrageous
number. And trying
number.
To get onto military bases.
Yeah. Josh, what do you think?
I think I broadly agree. You know, one thing that we didn't discuss is the people around Trump when it comes to economic policy are very much old school 1980s era thinkers. So you have a lot of so-called hard money people who believe in very high interest rates of the Fed to fight inflation. So if Trump comes in and he gets rid of Jeremy Powell at the Fed and he puts in the old school hard money monetary hawks, then we'll get rid of inflation. But on the flip side, we might cause ourselves a recession, if not potentially a depression.
Because we're just that far leveraged. Correct. Yeah. Todd.
I agree. It all sounded bad, so I agree.
that's a very totters and statement. All right, kicker topic quickly. If you could enact one single policy right now to help the economy, what would it be and why? And I'll quickly tell you mine. I'd get rid of all paycheck withholding. I've said this for years. I'd make people write the check themselves every single time, because the hearts of the people have to be changed before anything in the policymaker arena is going to be changed. No more nets and grosses of your checks. Everybody gets to feel what it is the government takes from them every single time. I just look at my youngest daughter. You know, she texts my wife the other day, because at times she thinks maybe your old man's being a little too harsh at times. And now she's doing her taxes and she's like, they want more? What? Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Welcome to the real world, sweetie. So, yeah. Now you can see why they did this to your daddy. I used to be a nice daddy. Now you saw what they did to me. Okay. That would be what I would do. Todd, what?
Yeah, for really serious, I'd get rid of most of the departments in Washington, D.C., as well as Social Security and Medicare.
That's four moves. So pick one.
You pick for me. Which one sounds
best? Well, the entitlements are about 65% of the budget.
Okay. There we go.
Jill?
And the Fed, because that's what I want to see happen. With that move, you would just tie the Fed funds rate to the 2-year Treasury yields, because that's basically what it is anyway. And then you leave out all of the manipulators that are causing the boom bust cycle. Anyway.
Or what Professor Werner called on our show, the central planners yesterday. Josh, quickly, what's yours?
I would take the route of energy policy and increasing drilling on federal-owned lands when it comes to oil and gas, getting LNG exports back on their drilling in Anwar up in Alaska. I think focusing on energy and getting us back to where we are a reliable month-in, month-out energy exporter would do a lot of good for the middle class in this country.
All right, let's get to predictions. Jill, go.
We'll see the end of the Republican Party in the next decade because they're worthless anyway. The Uniparty, like you said at the beginning of the show, Steve, it's completely worthless. All we have is basically like your buddy Chip Roy and a few others.
I mean, all this party's good at is depressing its own vote, which is basically all it's done the entire month of April so far. Josh, go ahead.
You know, Steve, I'll take a slightly optimistic prediction here. So when the Alvin Bragg indictment first dropped, this is the trial that's been underway this week in New York City, because that was the first of the four criminal indictments of Trump to drop a little over a year ago. I assumed, like many did, that he's a total dead man walking because this is a Biden 75-80% margin voting jurisdiction. It's an Alvin Bragg. It's a far left judge. I'm actually feeling somewhat confident-ish after looking at the jury pool this week for at least one reason, which is that two of the 12 jurors are lawyers, and they're probably liberals. Again, just playing the math here. But the solace is that a lawyer, Steve, is more likely to care about the law and is more willing to start asking at least some questions about Alvin Bragg's ridiculous theory of the case there. So while I think it's probably still 50-50 as to whether he's actually found guilty or acquitted there, that's actually a lot better than where I was last week.
All right. We're down to liberal lawyers as sources for optimism. That's... I'm starting to feel what Todd was just saying. Go ahead, Todd. Go ahead.
Well, listening to various sports commentary the last month has convinced me of this. The sports bro culture, which is the 18 to 55-year-old man whose number one leisure activity is just passively watching sports, the majority of them will either vote for Biden or not vote at all.
My prediction is the presidential candidates will not debate this fall. And what I'm about to say, I'm not joking. I believe this is going to happen. I don't believe the presidential candidates will debate this fall, but we will get a proxy debate between Bruce Jenner and RuPaul. I think that will happen this fall. You bring our trainee, we'll bring yours. Or ours, or whatever it is. Theirs. Jill and Josh, thank you guys for joining us. Good to see you.
Thanks so much, Steve.
You bet. It'll be Feedback Friday.
All the seasons are ours.
Feedback Friday is next. Stay tuned. All right, we're back here with Hour 2 on Blaze TV, radio, and podcast. Steve Dace here with Todd Erzin and all of you and our very capable intern, Victoria, who is doing a great job filling in for Aaron, who hopefully isn't doing a great job playing dad on his paternity leave. Let us know what you think about what we think via the SteveDace.com inbox. You can access that by emailing us, steve@stevedace.com. That's DEACE. Like us on Facebook, MeWe, and Gab. You can follow me at Steve Dace Show on Twitter, Gitter, Instagram, and TikTok. And then let us know that you love the show if you listen via the podcast by leaving us a 5-star review. And thank you to all of those that you have, all of you who have chosen to do that for us already. We appreciate all of those. And then also, if you wouldn't mind, or if you're interested, if you hit subscribe or on iTunes, follow. That means every time you've now subscribed to the show for free, and therefore every time we do a new episode, it'll show up in your podcast feed every single time. Thanks to all of you that have done that, too. Thanks to our friends at Eden Pure for coming back on the show and bringing you part one here of Feedback Friday. They're back with their world-famous... I added the world famous Thunderstorm air purifier. It's their top selling air purifier that quickly destroys the bad stuff that's actually causing the bad stuff in your air. It's not an air freshener. It's a purifier. So it goes after the bacteria, the molds, the mildew, even some viruses that are the reason why your air is ugh. Anyway, that's why it's got thousands of 5-star reviews. We shared so many testimonials from our audience over the last couple of years about how great this product did for them, because nothing can hide from the Eden Pure Thunderstorm air purifier, and there's no filters to buy ever. and over again. So you won't have to worry about changing those out, both out of pocket and out of your own time. So right now you can save $200 on an Eden Pure Thunderstorm 3-pack for whole home protection. You get 3 units for under $200. So you can put one on every level of the home, the garage, maybe take one to your office if you want. All right, again, use the code STEVE3. That's the code STEVE3 to save $200 at EdenPureDeals.com. Discount code STEVE3. Discount code STEVE3 at EdenPureDeals.com. All right, let's get to some Feedback Friday, shall we?
Okay.
Let's begin here from Jim Bicknell. 2 months ago, things got so dark I almost took my own life. Leaving my children fatherless, today I was baptized in the name of Christ, then had the honor of baptizing my own son. God is good all the time. And he sent along a picture of both. And I wanted to lead off with that because that is the very picture of what Christ offers. That which is dead is brought back to life. Dead things are resurrected. Hope replaces hopelessness. Now, and this gets into what we talked about yesterday, Todd. What is being stripped away from that message by much of the church in this era, and this is why we've lost our power. This is why we've lost our influence, is because we've said to the Jim Bicknells of the world for the last several decades that there you don't have to go through darkness to get to the light. You don't have to come to the end of yourself to get to rebirth. That right where you are in your comfort, in your happiness, in your personal ambitions, in your Pleasant Valley Sundays, without addressing any of the larger darkness taking place in our world or in your own life, frankly, it used to be, you know, when Billy Graham used to say, just as I am back in the day to a previous generation, Todd, he meant just for Jim, for the people like Jim Bicknell, mm-hmm. just where you are right now. That precipice you're on right now, that abyss that you are dipping your toe in the water of right now. The stain that crimson stain that sin leaves, that's all over you. That's what he meant by just as you are right now, you can come to the cross. You know what we mean a generation later? Just as you are in your own comfort, your pleated khakis, in your 3-stall garage, just as you are, and you're fine just as you are, and you can stay comfortable. We've flipped the paradigm. But what Jim is talking about here, that's the gospel. That's what it does. I once was lost and now I'm found. That's what it is. But it is a message that is missing from too many of our churches because we love Resurrection Sunday. We don't want to hear too much about Good Friday. And if we were actually shown what Christ endured, many of our members would say, that's obscene. That's disgusting. Why are we showing that? You know, like when a prominent family ministry booked me and Dr. Jeremiah Johnston for next week on their show last year to come down and talk about our nefarious Bible study that they really liked. And then when they found out that it was linked to our movie Nefarious that was rated R, they canceled us. Well, we couldn't possibly talk about a rated R movie. I asked them, have you actually seen our movie? I never got a response. Just one example of many. Which is why we don't see as many stories of people like Jim Bicknell like we used to in this culture. somebody who was dancing with the devil in the pale moonlight, man, and was thinking of consummating that relationship. Maybe this isn't a one night stand here. Into the pit we go. And yet out of the pit, he came. How? Because a lot of the times our suffering, our difficulties, our trials, our failures are what humble us so that God can actually reach us. By the way, we have a verse now. We changed it up this year. We have a verse that we end the show with. And over the years, we've done different verses. Isaiah 61 was our very first one. Ephesians 5:11, we closed with that for many years. Isaiah 61 being the scripture reading that Christ reads coming out of the 40 days in the wilderness after his temptation. Out of the desert, he comes in and he reads it for his hometown synagogue in the book of Luke. And he is given the honor of reading the scripture verse for that day, and that's what he reads, and he attributes it to himself. And then when people looked at this guy from his hometown, they're like, wait a minute, isn't this Joseph and Mary's kid with the questionable, you know, wasn't born 9 months after the wedding night, guys. So, I mean, who's this guy, right? And he looks at him and he says, today, this is fulfilled in your hearing. It's fulfilled among you. I love that scene. I love that. It's one of my favorite moments in the entire New Testament. It's just how you like them apples. And then we went with Ephesians 5:11, have no fellowship with the darkness, instead expose it. We did that for several years, and we did several interviews where we did that back in those days, Todd, did we not? Mm-hmm. Yeah. One of the reasons why I don't have a lot of friends now is because of what I did then to live up to that verse. Then we did John 3:17 for many years, and now we're doing Romans 8:28. All things work for the glory of God and for those called according to his purposes. So that terrible thing you're going through, that unimaginable thing you're going through, what Jesus went through for you was terrible. What Jesus went through for you was unimaginable. But then he walked out of the tomb. So can you. Sometimes we need to be in the tomb, metaphorically speaking, and roll the stone in front of the entrance ourselves and think there's no way out for God to finally show us there is a way out. So, Jim, thank you for sharing your story. And heck of a way, brother, to begin running your race by turning right around and baptizing your own son. I mean, that is as dude as it gets, brother, right there. 100%. Thank you for that note. You want to add anything?
Well, just being reminded of that ridiculous story from that church that canceled you. I haven't said something in a while. I don't, but it clearly needs to be said again. All you Christians out there, you have a rated R faith. If you don't really have faith. The devil needs to be defeated. That gets way worse than rated R. If you can't take your faith into those places, like a church is just flat out telling Steve, we can't go, you simply are no help to men like this letter writer, which is why they often get despondent in the first place. Many of them have heard of the thing that's supposed to save them, but the version of them that they've got is so weak, does not come close to meeting them where the evil is just overcoming them, and they get despondent. It's churches like that that let this men like this down all across America. You have a rated R faith. It's important. That's at least within the Catholic tradition, that crucifix is staring us in the face every Sunday in many of our homes. It's right by my bedside and in other places around the house. Look at it. Is that rated PG to you?
Lori writes, I know your wife grew up in the military. I'm sure you've heard of USAA. I have. And not just because of that, but also because their commercials are omnipresent during football season. They're in every commercial break. It is one of the major banking institutions that serves the military. It came out the other day that they debanked one of Trump's attorneys. I think she's referencing John Eastman. I mentioned that the other day.
Mm-hmm.
This is troubling on so many levels. Yes, it is. So many of us depend on USAA because traditional banking and insurance institutions are hard to navigate with our frequent moves, including back and forth overseas. However, we cannot let this stand. What's the most effective way to lodge our disagreement? Since many in the military are pretty conservative, this is really troubling for us. Do we contact the board? How do we find out who is on the board? I have a way to rally a small amount of people because I know that 500 or so of my Facebook contacts that would respond is just a drip in the pond, so to speak. So I want to be effective. Number one, Lori, 500 may be a drip in the pond in the overall amount of enlisted corps. But in terms of having a voice heard as a launch, that's a very stout number. Here's what I generally say when I get asked these kinds of questions. Before you, and you know what, as a military wife, I think I'll try to put it in I'll try to put it in language that I think fits this very circumstance. Before you go to war, okay, or contemplate what the plan of war should be, you need to figure out what assets of war you actually have. Okay, what do you have? All right. So in your case, you have the truth. You have conviction, and then you have human resources. You have the means by which you guys can combine to get a message out. You have access to shows like this that would be interested once you guys get on your combined message and amplify it, that could amplify it all the more. Okay. So I would start by assessing my own military readiness here, to borrow a phrase. And cause I get emails from people all the time in other contexts. You know, what do I do with my kid's school board? Why do you assume you're the only one thinking like this? Reach out to other parents. Because it's easy to get rid of one person. It's not so easy to get rid of lots of people, multiple people. A triple braided cord is tougher to break. So I would the first thing I tell you to do, Lori, is get together with that group of 500 you're talking about and find out who's all in to do something about this. Because if we're deplatforming one of, if we're debanking one of Trump's attorneys, why don't they just start debanking people who are actually Trump voters, right? I mean, what's next?
Oh, it's coming.
It's absolutely coming. So I would start with you in your own group who understands the, you know, what time it is and is willing to go to the mattresses for that, to that end. And I'd assess at that, then I'd assess how, who's really committed first so that I'm not alone. And you're not alone. It's just a lot of time. But we're often so disconnected nowadays, despite all these phones and everything else that give us access to all this information. We're more disconnected with one another than maybe we have been in any time and place in human history. So I would get with those 500 people first, get on a phone call, a Zoom, something, and start figuring out first and foremost who understands how serious this is, the signs of the times here, what time it is, and then start from there. That's the first step I would take. And I think that's true pretty much in general when you want to push back on the system. Leonard Joyner says, I'm an LTC in the U.S. Army and a military intelligence officer. I've deployed 5 times to the Middle East for the war on terror. I lost soldiers and friends in the process. And then I refused to get the vax. I saw it as idolatry. I submitted a religious exemption request and then spent 1.5 years waiting to find out if it had been denied. Congress finally stepped in before that happened, and I was one of the few fortunate ones that survived the purge. And that's what it was. But my noncompliance essentially ended my career. Now, after 25 years, I am retiring. I don't recognize the institution I joined at the age of 17. For this and many other reasons, yes, the social compact is destroyed, as you say, Steve, and there will be dire consequences for our society and our nation because of it. And this goes back to what Josh Hammer and I were talking about last hour. One incontrovertible moral principle. Are we allowed as human beings to own other human beings as chattel? Just one. Tore this nation asunder. More people died at Antietam, more Americans died at Antietam than any other singular battle in American history. Except for what happens at Planned Parenthood every day for the last 50 years, it's the bloodiest day in American history. But if you were to take that issue off the table and look at the rest of America at the time, with the exception of this is a more agrarian area, this is a more urban industrial area, with the exception of that, life was pretty much the same on a fundamental level. There weren't states. Hey, I want to get my freak on and sleep with a bunch of women outside of marriage. So I'm going to move to blank state where this is okay. Like you can do that nowadays. Hey, I want to have Pride Month be every month, 365. So I'm going to move here and fly the freak flag. Like you can do that nowadays, right? Mm. You couldn't do that back then. And I'm going to go to New Jersey where they'll just, you know, let me tap everything. No, you couldn't do that. That wasn't acceptable in New Jersey either. We have taken this in our time, and we have systemic, incontrovertible first things dividing us. I mean, there are some places where I can kill my child whenever I want, other places where I can't. There are some places where I can assault a child and soul murder them, and other places I can't. There are some places where I can pretend to be a woman and other places I can't. I don't know how that goes on into perpetuity, and I don't believe that it will. And I feel this tension constantly. I mean, tonight is a big night for Amy and Steve Dace. Because tonight, we get to watch our grandbaby, Autumn, for the first time while her mommy and daddy go out on their first date night since she was born. And we are very excited. And so I feel this tension where I hold in my hands the next generation of my legacy as a dad. And the natural instinct is to anticipate the best and want and hope for the best. And on one end, I do. And then I look at the reality, though, when I come in and do this job every single day, I look at the reality of where we are. And I know that this just cannot go on forever like this. It just simply can't. I don't really know what to do about it. I don't. I think it's just part of the era in which we live. That I think on one hand, we're going to have to be increasingly grateful to God for the blessings we have. And then increasingly less confident that they're going to just continue automatically and roll into the next generation. And then what that means, trying to hold on to those two tensions at the same time, I don't really know. Figuring out in real time, just like the rest of you are. Fascinating one coming up here in a second after I talk about our friends over at Better Balance of Nature. And it's hard when first of all, produce is expensive, number one. But then the schedules and stuff we keep, it's just easier to grab processed this, processed that, box this, box that. And that's where Balance of Nature comes in. All right. They provide an on-the-go solution. And they haven't raised their prices for that solution, by the way, in a decade. Their proprietary blend of 31 fruits and vegetables come in easy-to-swallow capsules. They give your body so much of the nourishment it needs. I mean, you can't even imagine nowadays eating 31 different kinds of produce in a single day, but that's what you're going to get with Balance of Nature's fruits and vegetables. And when you go to balanceofnature.com, you'll get 35% off plus $10 off any additional sets with your first order as a preferred customer by using my promo code DACE. Now, this is limited to 5 sets, but you're going to save a ton of money while getting the fruits and vegetables you need in your daily diet. All right? So I've been using this. I absolutely love it. Balanceofnature.com and use the promo code DACE for 35% off. It's like drinking 10 naked juices a day, but each of those have like 50 grams of sugar. So you're contradicting your stated goals, right? So it's balanceofnature.com. Use promo code DACE for 35% off. That's balanceofnature.com. Promo code DACE for 35% off. All right, Todd, this one is right in our wheelhouse, brother. You ready for this?
That could mean a lot of things.
I think you're going to like it, okay? Adam writes, Boromir isn't a bad guy. He's misunderstood. He's actually a good man. He does his duty. He tries to live in an honorable way. His problem is the same problem that many of us have. We believe that we can play the games. We can do it. We can outsmart or outwill our human nature. Of course, abortion is bad, we say, but I can use it as a compromise to win this election. When we compromise on principles, it is us that becomes compromised. Give Republicans the weapons of the enemy. Let's use it against them. Doesn't work. Can't work. All right. And you see this with Trump trying to sell out on the issue. He has mooring. It's almost like he's giving us nobody to vote for. You look at this month. Trump just starts a civil war in his own base over abortion that no one even thought was needed to be discussed or was on the horizon. And now you look at what's going on with Mike Johnson in the Congress, just selling us out on the border, budget, everything. And it's just like this party can do one thing, man, really well. It's depress its own vote. It does that well. Excellently, in fact. Adam writes, I'm tired of voting for the lesser of two evils. I won't do it again. To quote the only good thing to come out of Netflix's Witcher, evil is evil, lesser, greater, middling, it's all the same. And at this point, I don't know what I will do. I don't know that there's anybody to vote for. That said, I'm starting to think voting doesn't even matter at this point anyway. So here's whose job it is to convince Adam. That's the Republican Party's job. That's their candidate's job. Not mine. Not mine. I don't disagree with anything Adam says. I have a different solution to what I think the current dilemma or manifestation of this is, but fundamentally I don't disagree with any of this.
Correct.
So I think it's a wicked thing for one believer to try and convince another against his own conscience. Unless a believer's conscience is, you know, I think I should leave my wife and kids, then I think your conscience is seared and should be confronted, right? Mm-hmm. But barring something obvious like that, I think we should, as believers, respect one another's rights of conscience. God gave us those consciences. And I have a different solution to what I think is the dilemma that he's articulating, but I don't disagree with the dilemma that he's articulating. And his point about Boromir, again, we think that we're going to be the ones that are going to wear, we're going to wear the One Ring. And what's the difference between Boromir and Aragorn? Humility. That's the difference. They're both great men of valor. They're both great warriors. They're both great champions. They're both very brave. They're both badasses. They're both guys you're calling if you're in a fight. And both guys you're going to make sure you're coming correct around, right? Okay. What's the difference? One guy knows he can't wield the ring. One guy knows this. Humility is the difference. One guy still thinks that he can. And humility is often, and a lot of times we think humility is thinking lesser of ourselves. Not necessarily. Humility really means being self-aware and thinking more of God. I'm not God. Now, that'll often lead you to thinking lesser of yourself, but not like in a fake pious way. Let me get sackcloth and ash. I'm worthless. That's another form of, that's not humility either. Okay. That's a reverse form of arrogance. I've got nothing to offer, so God wasted his time making you, right? No. Okay. But humility is an understanding of your limitations and that you are, that God is God and you are not. Aragorn has that. Boromir doesn't. And that's the difference between the two.
Well, having humility means you don't see Aragorn act desperately. because he understands the things he's meant to control and the things he can't and who he needs to honor and what he can't honor. And that's it comes out clearly at Boromir at the end of Fellowship of the Ring when he's about to do the worst thing he can do and forcefully take the ring from Frodo. But he's making a claim that is a good claim, but he's doing it desperately. He says, I only seek the strength to defend my people.
Right.
He so badly knows what's at stake. Mm-hmm. But he thinks that he somehow can pound the square peg into the round circle. And Aragorn just, ultimately, Aragorn is Moses. You know, as you say, be still and await the power of the Lord.
Mm-hmm. And that's what the ring is. That's why it cannot be wielded. Human nature in its natural state, in its craven state, cannot be perfected. Why did it have to be thrown into a fire? Well, the scriptures describe a refiner's fire. Okay? That's why. All right? That's what it means to be born again. That's what it means. It means to give up, to die to yourself, okay, in your current, in your flesh, all right, and accept new, and understand that, you, first of all, you must do this. That you must do this. Paul, in fact, even said he had to do it daily, okay, that we must do this. Our flesh is rotten, okay, and so we cannot be led or guided by that. But the problem is we can't be guided by spiritual things until we've reconnected to the actual spirit itself. And that's what, for people that wonder, what does born again mean? Does it just mean, you know, saying a particular prayer? I mean, that maybe it can be part of it. I mean, there's not necessarily a incantation in the scriptures of what is required to become born again doesn't provide that. But it's really a process of understanding that I have to die to myself and my flesh. And that, and my spirit, the part of me that lives forever is disconnected from God and can only be reconnected with him by dying to that which separated us, which is my flesh. That's really the process by which what I just described occurs. And Jesus said that you cannot enter the kingdom of heaven like that because we can't enter it in our sinful state. So the process of what exactly that looks like, or how it's initiated, is never itemized in the scriptures, but we are given a standard by which we can tell whether people are undergoing that process or not. Jesus said, by their fruit, you will know them, right?
Yes.
And so a bad tree cannot produce good fruit, right?
Right.
And a good tree cannot produce bad fruit, right?
Right.
Right. So by and large, if someone's life is bearing spiritual fruit, then they are undergoing that process. And if someone's life is not bearing good spiritual fruit on a consistent level, we all have blind spots and this is a pruning process. OK, but on a consistent basis, if you're like, I can't see any obvious fruit at all in that person, then regardless of what they claim otherwise, it's not happening there. Speaking of spiritual matters, we're going to tackle a weighty one when we come back. You're on the Steve Dace Show, powered by our friends over at Patriot Mobile. Unfortunately, we do not have a fully developed parallel economy yet. Fortunately, one place where we do is with one product we all need to use nowadays. That's our mobile phones. You can make the switch today to make sure that you are with America's only American mobile service provider. You don't have to give directly to people who hate you any longer, and you get outstanding customer service. For example, any point in time you need to switch to the various networks within their hub, they'll help you to do that absolutely free of charge. When you go to make the switch, first and foremost, if you're a veteran or first responder, let them know. They've got extra ways to say thank you for your service if that's you. Everybody can use the promo code Steve to get a free activation with the promo code Steve at patriotmobile.com. Let them know. Do you want to upgrade your phone? Keep your current one. Want to change your number? Keep your current one. They'll customize it for you any way you'd like with an outstanding U.S.-based, meaning you can understand them, customer service team at patriotmobile.com. Again, head over to patriotmobile.com. Okay. I'm going to read this next note on a Feedback Friday without interruption. I want to get all the way through it because this gentleman took the time to itemize and articulate several very serious theological points. And so I want them to be I think because he took the time to do this, I think that they should be heard by the audience uninterrupted the first time in the context and in the flow that he passed them on and sent them.
Okay.
Okay. This is from Sam. From Sam Imiak. He says, you guys typically have a very interesting show, and I enjoy it. As an Orthodox Jew, I have some thoughts on this topic as it relates to the Jews and either replacement theology or dispensationalism. It is clear to me from my studying of the Christian Bible and its history that no matter what vision of a version of this philosophy you espouse, the view of the authors of the Christian Bible is an anti-Jewish exegesis. Statements such as the Jews are the synagogue of Satan, or the Jews have scales over their eyes, which is the reason they denied the obviousness of the Messiah, come to mind. I have two fundamental issues with this I would love your input on. I have asked these questions to many Christians over the years, including a Catholic priest of the largest parish in Baltimore, or at least that's what he told me anyway, and I didn't get sufficient answers, so I'd love to hear your take. Firstly, the Hebrew Bible is axiomatic. For the Hebrew Bible to be false, but the Christian Bible to be true is not possible, even if you are a Marcionite. We know from Numbers chapter 1, verse 2, that tribal identity comes from patrilineal descent. The tribe your father comes from is your tribe. We know from Deuteronomy 13:7 that Jewish national identity comes from the mother. If this is true, Christianity has a paradox inherent in its core. If Jesus is born of a virgin and is the second person of the Trinity, the genealogies in Matthew and Luke tying Joseph to the house of David are entirely irrelevant. Jesus doesn't have a human father from the tribe of Judah or the lineage of David, and cannot be the anointed king who brings about world peace and rebuilds the third temple. If, however, Jesus was born of the lineage of David and comes from Joseph, assuming we just granted those are accurate for the sake of argument, he can be the promised Messiah, but could not be the second person of a triune Godhead. So it's in its own internal logic one could not be persuaded to have left Judaism for Christianity. Second, why did Jesus not bring about the fulfillment of prophecies that the Messiah is tasked to carry out? Did Jesus create a worldwide knowledge of God, like it says in Habakkuk? As you say so many times, we're plagued by paganism. This was obviously not accomplished. Did Jesus bring about world peace, like in Isaiah 2? Has the third temple in Jerusalem been rebuilt? Have the nations of the world come to the temple of Israel and ask them to teach them about God's nature, like in Zechariah 8? None of these prophecies have been fulfilled. God's nature is less known throughout the world. War has been waged on Jesus' behalf for centuries. He even said, I have come not to bring peace but a sword. The temple was destroyed in the first century, not rebuilt. I have other questions such as, how is a triune God not in direct contraction with the Shema, Deuteronomy 6? How do you understand the first seven passages of Deuteronomy 13? I understand this email is very long and filled with doctrine that has been debated for 2,000 years, and I'm grateful for the Jew not to get murdered for it this time, LOL. It would be a pleasure to hear from you on this, even though my hopes are not high. With love for you and your family, Sam Imiak. This is a phenomenal email, Sam. Phenomenal. And I am going to address it. And I must say...
After we're done with Romans, of course, so we'll get to it in 20 years.
I must say, I'm a little surprised that you thought we would not address this. I have gotten similar challenges over the years, but not as well articulated as this one, which is one of the reasons why I've not entertained them. The other reason why is because when I started this show, I believed there was a Judeo-Christian silent majority, and that what I could potentially do. Remember, my first book wasn't Apologetics for Patriots. Was that my first book, Todd?
No. It was Salt and
Rules for Patriots.
Well, I'm going all the way back.
No, you're talking about like a pamphlet I wrote that 12 people read for our local audience.
That's a good book.
Yeah, but the first wide release book I wrote was Rules for Patriots: How Conservatives Can Win Again. So my assumption when I began this is not that I would have to do apologetics or worldview, but that I would be the guy, you know, one of the people doing this for a living. We're downstream helping to take the people that have been properly catechized, okay, And in that can be a wide variety of people who have a very similar moral framework, even if they have at times important, if not incontrovertible or irredeemable, theological disagreements. Within that can be people like me and an Orthodox Jew. One of my very best friends in this business is an Orthodox Jew, for example. All right. It can be people that are LDS. I work with someone who is maybe the most well-known member of the LDS Church in the United States of America, named Glenn Beck. There are fundamental theological chasms of disagreement between me as an evangelical and an Orthodox Jew. There are fundamental chasms of disagreement on theological matters between me as an evangelical and someone who's LDS like Glenn. Okay. But my understanding of the battlefield when I got into this business was that that was not going to be my primary task. Sure, if you want to know why me as an evangelical, I think certain things and they propel me to have the same moral viewpoints that some of you that we disagree on these theological matters also have, I'm commanded to have reasons for the hope that I have, right?
Yes.
And so I would answer those questions. But if you went back and listened to the show for the first few years, we didn't do the kinds of stuff that we're doing right now. A lot of it was missional based. Okay, hey, here, you know, let's take this guy out in the primary. That's what we did. Okay. As we got further and further into this, or let me say, as I got further and further into this, it was very clear we don't have the numbers. It was very clear that there was no silent majority to rally. And so, you know, when I talked to you guys about men, this is a football, I had to learn that lesson myself. I was like, oh, I'm not. That's not going to be primarily what I'm actually going to be able to do. I'm going to have to go back and teach, which I didn't think I was going to have to do. And frankly, I wasn't qualified for. So then I had to recalibrate my own level of knowledge and study and everything else, you know. The last few years, the spiritual matters have become so prevalent in the natural realm that now to address them as just economic theories or just to address them as counter sociological theories on marriage and family isn't sufficient, because they're not, those are manifestations of what they really are. And so that has led us to be more directly spiritual in how we have analyzed even daily events on the program. And you have felt that, I'm sure, going through on a day-to-day basis, being here for 9 years now. This is not the same show that you started on 9 years ago. The worldview is the same, but the approach of this program is not what it was when you started here 9 years ago.
Exactly.
Okay, and you started at the beginning of this evolution, and now you're here at the tail end of the full realization of it, and it's because it's my own revolution, and since it's my name on the show, if I have an evolution, the show is going to. But now I feel like we have to maybe more directly, even within our own ranks, answer questions like this. Because I think a lot of people honestly don't know, haven't even thought these things through. So I'm going to do that as best as I can in just a few minutes. First, a reminder, speaking of Glenn, it was him and his associates that started the company realestateagentsitrust.com, and they did so because they kept running into real estate agents that they couldn't trust. So they didn't want that to happen to you, especially now in the Let's Go Brandon real estate economy. So that's why they created realestateagentsitrust.com. And it's a referral agency, agents from all over the country. A lot of times they're from right here in the Blaze audience. So you know that you've got a worldview similarity, or at least moral similarities with them. So maybe there's an initial trust factor there. They'll be the top sellers in your area. They'll know the ins and the outs of how to get you to where you ultimately want to go, whether it is halfway across the country or just across town. They can help you. realestateagentsitrust.com is where you want to go. That's realestateagentsitrust.com. All right, here's what I want to do with Sam's note. I want to start with a meta point, and then we're going to take on Sam's points one by one. Okay, since he chose to, and by the way, I'll just tell you up front, I don't have every answer for all of Sam's points, so I'm not going to pretend to. All right. And when I don't, I'll point that out. But there is. But if I'm going to allow you to itemize points on your end of this, Sam, then I think it's fair that you have to acknowledge my itemized point as well. The meta item. Is that fair?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's what an exchange of ideas is, right? The meta itemized point of Christianity is not to go back and perfectly figure out and thread all of these various theological nuances that are important. But the problem is, we're not even sure in our humanity that we're even asserting the premise of them correctly all the time, let alone getting to the proper conclusion to them all the time. That's where our own humility has to come in. That's why Christianity begins with a very humble statement. Did a dead man walk out of a tomb alive? If he did, then we enter into all of these arguments and discussions. If he did not, there is no point to any of these arguments or discussions. So I could do that. I won't. Because I also think people are genuinely curious to hear how some of these things would get reconciled. And so I'm going to do my best to reconcile them. And maybe some of them I won't be able to. But understand that Christianity is not proven by whether or not it lines up perfectly with your particular understanding of Judaism and the various threads of what the prophets had to say and when they were meaning them or saying them. For example, not even a lot of Christians don't even believe there's going to be a third temple. This is a belief that not even a lot of Christians have, as you were addressing. So we could get into some of these nuances, and we will, but ultimately Christianity isn't based on a nuance. These debates are only worth having if Jesus is alive. And I do notice, Sam, that is the one point of many you never raised. And if you were listening to our Easter show, Sam, what was the central point that I kept raising, which he's responding to? What is the central point that I kept raising over and over again? That. Because that's the central point of the entire faith. Is there a once dead carpenter named Yeshua of Nazareth who is now alive? If he is, then we contend with these things to wrestle with what that means. If not, then there's no point in contending with these. Now, this is now, though, where the burden... So that burden is on you, Sam, and everyone else in your camp that is not a believer in Christ. You have to reconcile with, is he alive? And if he's not, then what's my counter narrative to explain all the events that took place in the world after the belief that he was? Okay, that doesn't mean, by the way, that our side doesn't have a burden of proof either. Is that because no? And so you allude to some of these things. So in the time I've got here, let me go through as many of these as I possibly can. First of all, I'm in the Old Testament. You said the Bible is the New Testament is the Christian Bible is anti-Jewish. If you believe that, then you're going to have to believe the entire Bible, including the Old Testament, is. The things that are said by, first of all, the people who called the Jews the synagogue of Satan, that's written by Jews, talking about other Jews, rejecting the Jewish Messiah. The things that the explicitly Jewish Bible in the Old Testament says about Jews, stiff-necked, worthless men. I mean, we could go on and on and on. Cursings, swallowed up whole. Moses comes down. The Jewish deliverer, he comes down from the mountain. What's the first thing he does after he sees what has gone on at the bottom of the mountain? Leads a purge. Him and the Levites just slaughter the Jews that had turned to the devil in just literally a matter of days since he went up the mountain to get the word. So if you're going to take every criticism of a Jewish person based on their behavior or their theology as being anti-Jewish, then you're gonna have to take the whole Bible as anti-Jewish. We got Jewish prophets condemning other Jews. We got Jewish prophets condemning Jewish kings. We've got Jewish princes sleeping with their Jewish king father's concubines and trying to lead insurrections. I mean, if the standard is being critical of Jewish behavior or Jewish theological practice at a given time in the strictest of languages indicates that you're anti-Jewish, then my friend, starting with Noah's flood, okay, this thing gets real anti-Jewish the whole way through. You know what I'm saying? You're going to have to be, this is disagreement. Discipline isn't anti-Jewish. Everybody's a sinner. When Paul writes in Romans 3, all have sinned and fallen short of the glory of God, he's actually quoting the Old Testament when he says that. We're all sinners. We all are. So with all due respect on that front, I reject that premise. I agree with you that the Christian Bible cannot be true if the Hebrew Bible is true or is false. I agree with you. They have a symbiotic relationship there. But again, all of the claims of the Christian Bible are not about whether they line up with your understanding of Jewish hermeneutics. They're based on whether Jesus walked out of the tomb alive. And then we debate hermeneutics. So, for example, you cite Habakkuk 8. Did Jesus create worldwide knowledge of God? Yeah. Yeah. The name of Jehovah is more known now than it ever was when there was just one Jewish nation state. The name of Jehovah was preached and taken to the ends of the earth by the Christian church and is to this very day. Did Jesus bring about world peace like in Isaiah 2? Well, the Christian teaching is that Isaiah is splitting up the first and second coming of what the Messiah will do. You may disagree with that, but that's what Christians, how Christians would answer that. Have the nations of the world come to the people of Israel and ask them to teach them about God's nature? Yeah. Now we have these conversations all the time. Now we've got three religions claiming that Jerusalem belongs to them, Sam. So, I mean, yeah. I wish we had more time. Romans 8:28.